the house before we run. Let me also welcome the department. And I know this is not going to be a long meeting. I think it is important that as soon as the department has concluded making their own inputs, that we seek questions for clarity so that we can deal with this particular matter. I've asked Moss, the secretary, to also distribute documents on how the National Assembly has concluded on this particular matter, the old version, the latest version from the National Assembly, but I think the department will also indicate that to us now today. Without wasting time, members, I think we need to proceed because this is not our first meeting. Let me hand over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members. Chair, there should be two documents. I'm very loud. Am I disturbing? There should be two documents. The one says draft as on 8 May 2013. And then just a note, a two-pager note. Very briefly, Chair, just to explain firstly the thicker of the two, the draft of 8th of May. Members will see that there's underlined text and there's text in square brackets and bold type. That's very similar to the bills that we bring to Parliament. The underlined text just indicate where changes have been made in respect of insertions to the version that was originally tabled before the committee. In other words, everything that's underlined has been added, and the...
Just sorry, can we check? Do members have the second document? If we can just be given the second... I don't even have one, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and then the words in square brackets in bold type. Members all have that one. This is really the important document in anything, Chair. It's the text of the draft regulations. That is the proposed omissions from the draft that was originally introduced into Parliament. Chair, the two-pager note, I'll explain it now. It's only a two-pager. Members can read it at their leisure. That was a request from the ad hoc committee in the National Assembly. They just wanted a concise document setting out the various categories of judges that will be affected by these regulations. And the conclusion there, and you'll find it in the note, is that the categories are as follows. We've got judges in active service. They are in active service. And I think at the previous occasion we explained that judges never really retire. They serve for a fixed period, and then they are discharged from active service. They continue receiving salaries, but they're discharged from active service. So the second category is those judges who have been discharged from active service. But then there's an interesting twist there. In terms of the Judges' Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act, a certain category of those judges discharged from active service must remain available to perform service if required for up to 3 months a year. Now, to the best of my knowledge, this has not happened in the past number of years, but the provision is there. So theoretically, at least, those judges, notwithstanding the fact that they are not on active service, they must at least be available if called upon to perform active service. Then your third category would be the judges who have been discharged from active service and who are under no obligation to be performing judicial service in any capacity. There is a fourth category. It is not really, strictly speaking, a category, because it doesn't deal with permanent judges, but that those are the acting judges. And when we refer to acting judges in this sense, we're not speaking of people who have already been appointed as a judge and is then called upon to act as a judge in another court or to perform duty as, for example, the acting deputy president of the court or the acting deputy chief justice. That is not an acting judge. An acting judge, for the purpose of the regulations, would be a private practitioner, an academic, or a magistrate who is appointed as a judge for a very temporary period of time and later may or may not be appointed permanently as a judge. So we've got those categories. Firstly, inactive service. Secondly, discharged from active service but subject to be called upon to perform service. Fourthly, those discharged from active service and free from any obligation to perform any other service. And fourthly, your acting judges. Now, the committee in the other house and members in this house, in fact, in this committee, also grappled with the inputs that were received from the judiciary. You will recall the objections in respect of acting judges having to declare interests of judges discharged from the service, having to declare interests of problems raised with regard to the obligation pertaining to family members' interests to be declared, etc. Now, what the committee did in the other house is it used that little note and looked at those categories of judges. And if you look at this whole document, what it all boils down to is the following. In terms of these draft regulations, a judge in active service will always be required to make a full disclosure of his or her registrable interests. All judges in active service. Another thing for the judges in active service is that they will have to declare the registrable interests of their dependent children. And fourthly, they can make a voluntary disclosure of their immediate family members' interests, provided that those members give their consent. So in other words, it's a very basic rule. In active service, full disclosure, dependent children, and a voluntary disclosure, if you wish to do it, of your other immediate family members. That is the first category. The second category would be the judges discharged from active service who are under an obligation to perform service if called upon to do so. But they don't have the same cumbersome requirement for disclosure. They have to disclose, if you look at the regulations, you'll find it, in fact, they do not have to disclose the fixed property and the particulars detailing with the fixed property. The other things they will still have to disclose, in other words, shares, directorships, etc., that they will have to disclose. Also, no disclosure in terms of children, no disclosure in terms of immediate family members at all. The third category, judges discharged from active service who are not under an obligation to perform service if called upon, there's no requirement for disclosure. None at all. And lastly, judges in active service, acting judges, also there's no requirement for disclosure. But they did build a mechanism in, and if members can, if I can very briefly refer you to page two of the document. Right at the bottom, you'll find the regulation sub 3. The interests of an acting judge are not registrable, but the head of the court where such a judge holds an acting appointment may, on an application in chambers by a party to proceedings before that acting judge, require the acting judge to disclose to the head of the court and the party in question whether the acting judge has any interest that may or may be perceived to prejudice the integrity of those proceedings. In other words, they won't be subject to the rigorous obligation of the annual disclosure of all your interests, which makes sense. It's only an acting judge and you're appointed for maybe a month or something at a time. But what the committee did, it did envisage the scenario where a party in proceedings before the judge may have information or suspicion that the judge has some or other connection that may or may not be sound for that judge to adjudicate in the particular proceedings. And it's not the major mechanism, but what it makes provision for is you can then raise it to the head of the court, and the head of the court will then ask the acting judge to disclose to the head of the court and to the party whether or not that is the case. So that is just a fail-safe mechanism inserted there, Chair. And in fact, earlier I mentioned that judges discharged from active service who are under no obligation to perform service, they also do not have to declare any interests. But the same provision as pertaining to these acting judges are also made applicable to those judges. And your typical scenario would be Judge X has been discharged from active service and is under no obligation to perform any other service. But
there is a commission of inquiry. The President and the Chief Justice feels that Justice X is the ideal person to conduct this inquiry. And you can still approach that judge, notwithstanding the fact that he or she is under no obligation, but you can always approach the judge and ask him or her to head the commission of inquiry or to act in a particular matter, and then the same provision will in fact also apply. In other words, if a party has any reason to believe that, hey, this judge has some other connection that doesn't make him suitable for a post, go to the head of the court or the Chief Justice and just ask him to disclose. Gee, that in a nutshell is as simple as I can put it.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much. But I thought what you will do is, having explained all that generally, that you will try and assist us and take us through.
Yes.
Certainly. Unless there's any question at this stage, we can proceed to do that.
Let us proceed so that we deal with all questions at that particular point. Is there Member Mashid?
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether I'm going to take you very back. But you see, listening to these struggles of trying to differentiate judges, just listening to these struggles that they are having, I start asking myself, why did we need this? What is that we are trying to deal with, and with this particular document or regulation? Because, I feel that this kind of struggle that I'm hearing of trying to differentiate the X from Y and what and all, whereas at the end of the day, that all of them are judges, they are sitting in front of our community and making judgments. And we have got particular issues with them that need to be regulated. But then now you start having all these struggles. Actually, according to the department, why do we need this? What are we trying to achieve? And if there is something that we are trying to achieve with this, and then those little differentiations of these judges, are they not defeating the objective in one way or another? So I would have loved whether we have got the same understanding of what we're trying to achieve with this, so that, if we don't find ourselves laboring on things that defeat the intentions that we had and the fears that we may be having in the judiciary. So that's what I was just simply checking, Chair, whether we've got a common understanding of the reason that gives rise to this exercise that we are busy with.
I'm not sure if you want to respond.
No, just
1 second, Member Joseph.
Thanks, Chair, that's fine. The legal answer to that is quite simple, Chair. We're under an obligation. There's an Act of Parliament that says they must be registered like this, and the Act also says more or less what the judges must declare. The Act does leave us some scope. I'm of course referring to the Judicial Service Commission Act. The Act leaves us scope to differentiate between the various categories of judges, but we are under a legal obligation in terms of the Act to make provision for this register, and the register must be approved by Parliament. Chair, and then in as much as I'm able to do so, the rationale for this is not too complicated. It's in fact a fairly widely accepted international practice now. In terms, if you look at judicial ethics, it serves to promote public confidence in your judiciary. That is the whole idea behind it, so that the public will know that the integrity of the judiciary is beyond any reproach. That is, and the purpose of this is not to attack or to burden or to anything. It is really to bolster confidence and to promote the image of the judiciary as a whole, too.
Yeah. No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think we've moved on from a long history. I think where judges did not declare in the past, and then we moved to the code of conduct, and now we're busy with the declaration of interest. So I think we are making progress. The question that I wanted just to ask, if the judges if they make a full disclosure, I just wanted to have clarity on, do they have to make, like we as members of parliament have to do an annual disclosure. So I just wanted clarity on that. That if you, is it going to be an annual disclosure apart from what we are writing in the law in terms of when they sit or don't sit or if they obliged to do so or not. I just wanted to know if that is also covered in there.
Maybe let's hold on that.
Okay,
for that,
right.
Because that's part of what is going to be presented to us now.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe
the issue that I think we need to raise here, because these are issues that were raised by judges themselves when they made presentations to ourselves. You know, the inputs we received previously.
Yeah.
Yeah? In terms, when they were not happy with the original regulations, proposed regulations, you see. And I see the department is now giving in to that situation. But let us wait, let us go through.
I know, Chair, that I may be disturbing you, but now that the rationale has been given why we need this declaration to up our public confidence in our judiciary, now the question that I'm asking myself, Chair, is when you say this is an acting judge and he takes the podium as a judge, ordinary people, when they get in the court, they see a judge in front. They don't see something called acting, because that person assumes the position of a judge. If you say it's acting today and then it doesn't need to disclose, does that enhance that public confidence or does it defeat it? I just leave it there, Chair, then I think we can continue.
If you can clarify that, then so that we can move forward.
Thanks, Chair. I think as we go through this, members will understand that it's really not practicable to have that onus of the declaration for acting judges. If you look at what is required of the judges that have to declare, if you're only at acting for a month at a time, it makes no sense. I think it will become clear as we go through it. And with your leave, I'll kick off, Chair.
I think let us proceed. But you see, one thing that you must have in mind: the public has already been told that we have a lot of judges that are not in active service. You see, and here you are talking about acting judges. You see, because that was in the media over the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Now, I'm not sure as to how do you link the two. Because you go and appoint a lot of acting judges outside there, whilst you have a number of judges that can do that duty, because they are there to do some work for 3 months, as you indicated. You see, why don't you take those judges so that they can disclose? Because that's where the problem is, because you are struggling to assist acting judges, people that are in private business, people that because it's a problem to them. You see, it's a problem to them. But I think proceed, assist us, but whilst doing that, try and clarify that situation to us too. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I'll do that. And with your leave, just to bear in mind that we need acting judges, not to fill vacancies, but to train judges for permanent appointment. So if you keep using your retired judges, you will never have a new breed of judges to be appointed. That is the way that Judicial Service Commission appoint judges. They look at the record of that person when he or she was acting, and on the basis largely of the performance of the judge as an acting judge, the decision is made whether he or she is fit and proper to be appointed permanently as a judge. So we will always have a big number of acting judges too. I think as we go through this, it will become clearer and we will be able to conceptualize maybe some of the issues. If I can kick off with the introduction, the first change there, that is really just technical. We say Parliament of South Africa, having considered the regulation, approved the regulation, so I'm not going to explain anything there. I think it's fairly straightforward. Then in the schedule, the contents part, you'll see that Annex B, Form 3 there, the whole of Form 3 is being omitted. Request for access to information to confidential part of the Register of Judges Registrable Interests. Members will notice that
they have omitted the whole part of that. In other words, nobody. Nobody other than the head of court, etc., will have access to the confidential part of the register. This is very much in line with Parliament's register as well. Nobody, it's nobody's business to have access to the confidential part. So all of that has been omitted. Then in the first regulation, the definitions. Members will note there that there's a definition being inserted, one of acting judge. That is what I explained earlier. Acting judge does not include a judge who is temporarily appointed to act in a different capacity or as a judge of a different court. Then you're not an acting judge for the purpose of these regulations. You have in any event to declare all the assets, etc. And judge in this regulations also do not refer to an acting judge. In other words, if you mean acting judge, we will say acting judge. The first regulation of note here is regulation 2. It says what the registrable interests are. And firstly, one says the registrable interests of all judges in active service and those of the family members. And B, judges who have been discharged from active service who are required to be available to perform a service in terms of the Judges Act are as listed in Annexure A. And I think for clarity, it will help us to go immediately. No, let's not go to Annexure A immediately. Sub-regulation 2, A, the interest of the judges who have been discharged from active service who are not required to be available to perform service are not registrable, but if such a judge is called on to perform service as a judge, the head of court may, on application in chambers by a party to proceedings, require the judge to disclose to the head of court and the party in question whether the judge has any interest that may or may be perceived to prejudice the integrity of the proceedings. And if the service in question is not related to a particular court, such as would be the case with a commission of inquiry, for example, then the application may be made to the Chief Justice. Secondly, part B there, the interests of a judge's dependent children are registrable if a judge is in active service. The interests of a judge's other immediate family members are only registrable if the judge is in active service, wishes to disclose those interests, and the immediate family members consent to that disclosure. Three there, the interests of acting judges are not registrable, but the head of court where such judge holds an acting appointment may, on application in chambers by a party to proceedings before the judge, require the acting judge to disclose to the head of the court and the party in question whether the judge has any interest that may or may be perceived to prejudice the integrity of those proceedings. Regulation 3 then deals with how you disclose your interests. 3.1, a judge referred to in Regulation 2.1, that is the judges in active service, and the judges discharged but who are still subject to being called up, must disclose particulars of all their registrable interests on a form which corresponds substantially to Form 1 in Annexure B and must lodge the disclosure with the registrar. A judge in active service must also disclose the registrable interests of his or her dependent children and may, in respect of other immediate family members, make disclosures as to which they may consent. As we've discussed earlier, in other words, in active service, always dependent children, immediate family members, there's an option to make a voluntary disclosure. Sub 2 there says the judge must lodge the first disclosure with the registrar within 30 days of his or her appointment as a judge. 3, the registrar must enter the particulars of the judge in the register and must cause a copy of all the interests relating to the judge to be delivered to the judge. All interests relating to the registrable interests of a family member of a judge must be made in the confidential part of the register, always in the confidential part of the register if you deal with immediate family members. Then 4, and this relates to the question that's been asked earlier, it says a judge may at any time make disclosures to the registrar or inform the registrar of amendments as may be required, but every judge must during March every year inform the registrar in writing whether the entries in the register are an accurate reflection of the judge's interests and, if applicable, make the further disclosures as may be required. 5, the other committee inserted this. It says if the registrar becomes aware at any time of any information relating to the interests of a judge in active service that may require material changes to the disclosures made by the judge, the registrar must in writing inform the head of court of the judge of that information. Sub 6 gives the registrar a further and even more important function and responsibility. It says that if the registrar has reason to believe that any judge has failed or is failing to comply with the provision of these regulations or may have disclosed incorrect or misleading information, the registrar must without delay invite the judge in writing to comply with the provision or to correct any information so disclosed. I think it's just important to note here that, as I said, this is not the draconian type of regulation, of legislation being proposed here. That's why it says you invite the judge. The registrar can't tell the judge, you bring it to his attention and invite him to just put the matter straight. 7 becomes more important if after 30 days has lapsed after the judge received a written invitation, the registrar still has reason to believe that the judge has failed or is failing to comply with the provision of the regulations or may have disclosed incorrect or misleading information, then the registrar must without delay lodge a complaint against that judge in the manner contemplated in section 43 of the Act. Now section 43 of the Act in fact puts an obligation on the registrar. It says the registrar must report failure to comply with these provisions, he must lodge a complaint, and then the whole disciplinary mechanism of the Judicial Service Commission will kick in. Regulation 4 is not strictly speaking related to these asset to the registrable interest chair. It's a different matter altogether. It relates to, members will recall that section 11 of the Act says that if you're in active service, you're simply not allowed to get any income other than that derived from holding judicial office, apart from royalties for books, legal books that you have written. 11.1, 11.2 says, now you are allowed to derive certain other income, but you must approach the minister, you must give consent before you can get that. And all that Regulation 4 does is it prescribes how you make that application. I'll go through it very briefly. It says the application for written consent of the minister, as contemplated in Section 11.1, that is the judges in active service, must be in writing and must correspond substantially with Part 1 of Form 2 of Annex B, and B, Section 11.2, that is those discharged from active service, must also be in writing and must correspond with Part 2 of Form 2 of Annex B. 2, the application, together with certified copies of supporting documentation, must be lodged in duplicate with the Chief Justice, who must consider it, must make a written recommendation to the minister and submit his or her written recommendation together with a copy of the application and supporting documentation to the minister for consideration. Interesting thing here is it is not really the minister's call. The minister is in terms of the Act required to give the permission, but you will see that this is really bounced up or taken up to the Chief Justice. So it remains a judicial issue. And the Chief Justice, as head of the judiciary, plays a major role in this regard. Sub 3, the minister must cause the Chief Justice and the judge who made an application to be informed of his or her decision regarding the application within a reasonable time. 5, we get back to the register again. 5.1, the register must correspond substantially with the format set out in Annex C. 2, the public part may be inspected by any person at the office of the registrar or at any other venue agreed to by the registrar during office hours and under the supervision of a person designated by the registrar. The registrar must keep the register in a safe place, and 4, under the heads of court, the registrar and official designated in writing by the registrar, and when it is relevant to a complaint referred to in section 14 of the Act, the person conducting the inquiry into that complaint have access to the confidential part of the register. And members will then see that all that part making provision for the public to get access to the confidential part of the register, that is all being omitted. Then there's a new sub-regulation 5 being added. I'm referring to page 5, sub-regulation 5, which is saying that the registrar must, for the purposes of indicating the degree of compliance with the register, in the annual report of the commission, as contemplated in 62C of the Act, also furnish the commission with the names of those judges in active service who have disclosed interests of their family members. In other words, as we've said the disclosures of immediate family members other than dependent children will always be voluntarily. But the committee felt that they do want the registrar to report and the report to just reflect the degree to which voluntary disclosures of family members have been made by the judges. Chair, with your leave, we can very briefly go to the annexes. Annex A, part one, that is the interest that must be disclosed by all judges in active service. One is the immovable property. Note that the physical address and the value of the property are to be disclosed in the confidential part of the register. Two, the shares, other financial interest in companies, that's in the public part, also in the public part. Three, directorships, business interest in the company. Four, any royalties derived from the application of Section 11 of the Act, that is where you've written legal books, legal articles. Five, gifts other than a gift received from immediate family members with a value of more than 1,500 Rand. Six, any other financial income not derived from the holding of judicial office. So, in part one, just the physical address of property and the value of property gets to the must be entered in the confidential part, everything else in the public part. Part two, the interests of judges discharged from active service, but they still require to be available to perform service. It is the same as in part one, except for the fact that immovable property is not included there. Part three will fall away, the whole of part three, and then there's a new part three. I'm at page seven now. The new part three relates to the interests of immediate family members to be declared by judges in active service, if applicable. A, in respect of the dependent children of the judge, the following interests in the confidential part of the registrar of the register, then it's the immovable property, shares, directorships, sponsorships, and gifts. And B, in respect of immediate family members other than the dependent children of the judge, any of the interests listed in A above that the judge may, with the consent of the family member, wish to declare in the confidential part of the register. Annex B, Chair, I don't think it's necessary to go through this now, Chair. It's just really the form that must be completed when you disclose the interests. Form 2, that is the application for consent that we've dealt with earlier. There's really nothing of note here, Chair. It's just a simple form. Form 3, as you will see, everything has been crossed out. It's falling away. Then Annex C is the format of the register itself. Again, Chair, I don't think it's necessary for me to go through that, other than just to just draw attention to the fact that this is, some members might be interested. It's been designed to be used and to be opened as an Excel spreadsheet, which will make it very easy for the registrar to enter what we call a book in respect of each and every judge, and it will make the updating and keeping this register in order very, very easy. Chair, that is it.
Thank you. Members, if there are questions of clarity, let's follow each other. It's
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have one clarity, second question, that why are these regulations shy in mentioning the spouses? Keeps on referring to family members, children, but there's nowhere where it mentions spouses. Because these judges have spouses, most of them, I'm sure. Thank you.
Chair, I think, Chair, my initial question is that we should not miss is the intention of the disclosure. And if it is really to boost the confidence of public on the judiciary, then we can't find ourselves defeating that objective. And again, is that we can't seriously and willy-nilly discriminate judges. The fact of the matter is that when a judge sits in front in a court, he's a judge, he's part of the judiciary. Whether it's for 1 month, it's a day, or whatever, is assuming an authority or a position of power, which then needs to enhance our judiciary in the country as such. And now, my initial question still stands. This difficult process of discriminating judges for purposes of making others not to disclose, but at one time or another they will assume the chair of a judge, I see it to be counter the objective. Number two, Chair, is that this report that we are looking at, the regulations, they are littered with the word may. And to me, it creates uncertainty on any provision. That any provision that we're talking about here, the person talked to may act differently, and there is no certainty, then you must involve other interventions to come and adjudicate what should have happened. Hence, we're putting a system that is not necessarily helping on its own without bringing people to come and judge the correctness or the incorrectness of an act or omission of a particular judge. It's littered with may, right? And the other thing, Chair, that I'm hearing which will need clarification is the register. I have not seen in the Act, you know, I have not recapped in the Act what's the definition of the registrar, what sort of a person are we talking about. But according to what it is being in here, it reduces that registrar to be just an ordinary clerk who cannot actually demand compliance on behalf of the head of justice or judiciary, or in the near future, I think it will be the chief justice. That means is that the Chief Justice must still get somebody who must whip judges to comply. The registrar will only cry, will only just simply say, no, can you disclose that? If the judge is not interested, just keep quiet. The registrar can't do anything. Then we're putting up a system that has got no authority to demand compliance from those that are supposed to comply in order to enhance this integrity and confidence into our judiciary. So those are the things that I'm just picking up quickly, that probably maybe if I get some further explanation, I may think otherwise, but up to now, they really make my hair to stretch up.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I also want to raise the issue about the vagueness of the immediate family member. I think it's necessary that be better clarified in terms of the spouse and the immediate family member and so on. And further, in terms of the broad concept of business enterprises, these days, you know, trusts, family trusts and so on has become very important instruments. So I think it's necessary that we specifically define trusts also. Specifically in NHA where there's reference to that. And then lastly, Chair, I don't think it's got exactly to do with this regulations that we're discussing at the moment, but it's got to do with a broader debate that's been raised by some of the honourable members. And that's the issue about how are we going to differentiate between the approach that we're taking now with the judges, firstly, and compare that to the role of magistrates. It's a different debate, but I think if we start to debate this issue, we must put this whole the whole issue in context. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm covered with the previous question about the annual disclosures. I'm covered with that. In this document with the red file, I see form 3, there's quite a bit of lines and sentences deleted. Now, why I'm asking that, if you go to Annexure B, I also see regulations relating to Judicial Service Commission 2009, but it's not deleted. So I just want to know what is the difference, why that is still the same, and then further on form 3 and those, because the gentleman official started off or earlier in his comment, he made reference to the Judicial Service Commission in quoting them in terms of under what provisions we operate. So I just wanted clarity on that. That's all. Thank you.
Is there any other clarity question? Maybe two chairs.
Just one chair. I just have a feeling, Chair, that the manner in which you are going through these regulations, it looks like we are going through these regulations with a fear of this particular sector. Because it looks like these regulations, you know, it's before you touch, and then that magistrate or that judge must accept and say yes or no, and if he says no, then you must go through all sorts of processes to actually get somebody somewhere to come and tell the judge to comply. When you just hear, you hear regulations that are treading with care, and being afraid of a revolt of some sort or something, I'm not sure. But when we deal with the declaration of members of parliament, this is not what we are doing. We are just clear. When you look at the declarations for public service commission, then they are clear. But here, it's almost like this document, when you hear it properly, that these judges will declare if they agree. If they agree. There are even provisions for judges, if they refuse, they can make representation of refusing to declare. But then now, is this objective of us to enhance this confidence a real thing that you want to achieve? Because if you want to achieve it, then you can't have options everywhere. If you have options, that means it is not a must to achieve this objective. They don't go hand in hand. So that's the point that I just wanted to raise, the feeling that I just get through this document. Mm.
Okay. Now, members must remember, when all this was introduced, the revolt we had from the judges themselves. Mm. Some of us were insulted in the media and all that, you see. But I think it is important that, you know, the three arms of the state are treated the same and equally. We can't have one arm treated differently, you see. Yeah, that is one thing. The second area is that, you see, because I also had a feeling that judges feel that they're above everything. That is the problem. And it is unfortunate. I'm saying we're lucky that the majority of us in this particular committee, in the select committee, are not lawyers. That is why, you know, we'll have a different approach from the National Assembly, because the majority are lawyers in there. That's the problem, you see? Because they must treat that carefully. Some of them might have an interest to go to become judges. You must understand that situation. Yeah. Now I'm saying this not necessarily to demonstrate something else. No? But I'm just saying all of us as members of parliament, you know, yeah, we must make sure that what we do, you know, is to make sure that all three arms of the state are treated the same, equally, and we move with the same understanding. The confidence you are referring to, the confidence they told us, you know, the department told us, you know, that must be instilled into those particular communities, must be shown in all arms of the state. Because definitely, If you had the the judge who resigned again, who is that again? Of the what court? The Gauteng South Court, no? The head of the South, who resigned. If you read what he said in the papers then, if you read also if you were in the Free State and listened to what the appellate court judge, head judge said there in the Free State to us, you will then understand what, and we asked, what is the fear from the judges? What is happening? Because these are some of the issues that must be answered. What is the fear if they can't be treated like the president of the country? But, you know, if you take what is happening in the newspapers around their salaries, around their benefits and everything else, you know, they are treated even better than the president of the country or equal to the president of the country. When it comes to something else, they want to be treated differently. You see why? You see? Now, that the department must assist us to deal with that particular situation. Hence, and I think it is important that the chair of the other committee in the National Assembly is here with us, so that he understands what is it that we are saying here. And if we are to make changes to these regulations, you know, we will have to sit down with that particular committee and say, no, let's understand this. Because it is not for now. We must think for the future. Yeah. We must think for the next 30 years, what is going to happen? What might happen in between, you see? And that is the situation. But if you can assist us and respond to the clarity seeking questions that have been. But you see, the major point is you can't be a referee and a player at the same time. How come that the Chief Justice becomes the head of almost everything else? You see? Why don't you look for an outsider and define that person correctly? You see? So that person can have more power. Like it's happening to all of us, to every arm of the state. Like it's happening to all other institutions that have the similar situations, you see. Why can't it happen the same? And that's the point members are asking. But if you can assist us in clarifying all those.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll do my best, Chair. Just very briefly, more by way of a remark, I think we must just be, and I cannot claim to speak on behalf of the judges, but I think we must bear in mind that their argument is that, and it's quite correct that you said, members of parliament, you've got the similar obligation to declare. Being a senior management service member, we've got a similar declaration. The judge's argument is simply that once you discharge from active service, why do you keep this onus on them? Once I retire from the department, and I speak under correction, once you are not MPs anymore, you will not be completing this register. But judges are required to do it for as long as they live. And that is where the intricacy is coming on. That is where regulations
can you also deal with this? Because, you see, judges are called judges.
Absolutely, yes, Chair. Yes.
Now, one thing that is there, judges have a salary from the state forever. And judges can be called upon to assist and preside over any other situation. Now, there's a huge difference between members that only serve for 5 years and they are gone, and judges that are there forever. You see? That's the difference that is there. And that is the question that must be answered.
Absolutely, Chair. Completely agree with you there. And I think the rationale here was because of the salary for life. That is why you have this obligation, and that's why the Act prohibits you from earning income that is not derived from your salary as a judge. That is possibly a different matter, but I think the rationale behind the regulations were further, and we've referred earlier to confidence, that for those judges in active service, you need that confidence that is where the judges derive their income from. No possibility of fraud, of bribery, of anything like that. That's why we concentrate on, or the regulations at least concentrated on the active service. And then again, I cannot, of course, speak on behalf of the other committee, but we must remember that all these changes in this document is not derived from the department. It comes from that committee. And I think there they gave a bit of scope as empowered in terms of the Act itself. The Act says you can differentiate between the various categories of judges, and I think that is why they said very well, but for those discharged from active service, but who are still subject to be called up, that obligation to declare must be held intact. And then they made the final concession, if I can use that word. It's maybe not the correct expression, but the final concession, that if you're discharged from active service and you're not under any obligation, then you do not have to complete the register. That doesn't, of course, release a judge, never mind how old he or she is, from complying with Section 11. Section 11 of the Act has an absolute prohibition on income derived from non-judicial office unless you've got that consent in writing from the minister, and the minister obviously will consult with the Chief Justice. That role is there. I don't know if I can take it really further than that, but these are the kind of things that one plays around in your mind, and I'm sure at the next meeting members will have had an opportunity to develop their thoughts on this and have more deliberations on this. With regard to the spouses issue, Chair, and the definition of spouses, I just want to draw attention to the fact that one can really, when you read the regulations, it's almost impossible to read it in isolation. It makes no sense. All these cross-references to the Act every time, but we've continuously referred to Section 11, Section 14, etc. You really need to read the two together, and those people who will be affected by the regulations, namely the registrar and his or her office, the judges themselves will be subject to these provisions, the Judicial Service Commission will have complaints, etc., to be dealt with in terms of this. We'll always have to read both sets together, sets of legislation, the Principal Act, which is the Judicial Service Commission Act, and the regulations. And members will recall that in Section 1, Regulation 1, the definitions, it says in these regulations, any word or expression to which a meaning has been assigned in the Act shall bear the meaning so assigned to it, and unless the context otherwise indicates, and then we define a few things that's not in the Act. But spouse, or immediate family member, for example, is one of those things that's defined in the Act. And just for members' benefit, I will read it. It says, immediate family member, in relation to a judge, it is Section 7 of the Act. Immediate family member in relation to a judge refers to the spouse, civil partner, or permanent life partner of the judge, and includes dependent children of and family members living in the same household with that judge. But there's a number of things, but that is one of the more important ones. It is defined there. I'm not too sure if I follow the question regarding the use of may or must. I can just generally state that whenever the regulation says may, you normally use may to give a power. It's not something that must be done, but it's a power that you give a person. You have the power to require a person to do this or that. That's why you say you may. You may do something or you may not do something. When you want the person to act, impose the obligation, then you'll have the must. But I really need not make clear. I think members are at this time, though, you are quite well versed in that, Chair. But maybe if it's more specific, I can attempt to give you a better answer, but that is just generally regarding the use of that. The registrar's authority, Chair, I am not sure, with respect, if I can agree with the contention that the registrar doesn't have enough power. And in fact, the registrar is a very strong person. The registrar derives authority both from the Act itself, Section 14, if I remember correctly. No, not 14, but anyway, 11 to a lesser degree, and 13 specifically. It derives authority from Section 13 of the Act and from the regulations itself. Now, I said earlier where I said that the registrar must invite a judge. That is a polite way. That's a polite way of telling the judge do this. But beyond that invite, if you read the next regulation, it says if the judge do not, then the register must. He must lodge the formal complaint. No option there. He must do it. So there's no discretion. If the judge do not comply, that is what you do. I think we cannot really go beyond that. And I do not think... And of course, you've got that whole intricate system in the Judicial Service Commission itself and the whole chapter dealing with complaints. There's quite a lot of leeway to judicially manage these issues without becoming formally antagonistic, etc. But in the last and final event, as I said, the registrar's under obligation. If there's no compliance, the complaint must be lodged, and if you members will recall the rest of the Act, once a complaint is lodged, certain processes kick in automatically. No discretion involved. There must be consequences once the complaint is lodged. Form 3, there was a question about Form 3. Again, Chair, I must apologize if I didn't understand it. Just to note that Form 3 is being omitted as well. That's why all those text. Form 3 used to be when the regulations make provision for a member of the public to ask for access to the confidential part of the register. That's when we designed Form 3. But as I've said, that whole part about giving a member of the public the right to ask for access to the confidential part, that's all been omitted. So there's no more need for Form 3. That's why everything there is just being deleted. Chair, you will also note that I have been joined by who is popularly referred to as the main policy guru in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, my colleague to my left, Chair, Mr. J.B. Skosana. I'm not sure if you want to add anything.
Thanks. I can only comment on the issue of the magistracy. there was one question raised around the magistracy. One, the Magistrates Commission operates on a separate dispensation under the Magistrates Act of 1993. And that dispensation basically predates the constitutional dispensation because the commission was established for the constitutional subject. The idea, therefore, is that we will, once the standards have been set for judges, they will then be extended to a magistrate. So the idea is that once the code and the regulations, these have been finalized, we'll then go back and revise the entire Magistrates Act and bring it in line with the JC Act. So the same standards apply across the magistracy. Currently, the disciplinary processes and complaints are very haphazard. They are not helping anyone. But we've said we can't touch them until we've got the standards. Let's look at the standards that Parliament is going to give in terms of this, then it will be easy to align moving forward. On the issue of the Secretary, remember Parliament have approved the Supreme Court bill, which the President put into operation. The Registrar, who is going to be bound by this Act, is not appointed by the Chief Justice. It's appointed by the Minister in consulting the Chief Justice. And the Secretary does not come from the judiciary. It comes from the Office of the Chief Justice. The Office of the Chief Justice is a department that comes from that Act. So the Minister will consult the Chief Justice and appoint a Registrar. That Registrar is accountable to the Minister in the very same way that the DC is accountable to the Minister. So if the Registrar, for any other reason, does not perform any of the functions in terms of this Act, that's the result back on this Parliament. The Minister will be required to come and say, but you are not doing 1, 2, 3, whatever. So there's that built-in mechanism. So the Registrar is the representative of the Minister who is assigned the responsibility of overseeing this Act. The last point, Chair, I think the approach that has been taken in terms of this regulation is to take a minimalist approach. Parliament is allowed to amend and change this regulation as we go along. The fact of the matter is that there's nothing on the ground now. And if we are going to discuss until we get all the other things, all the consensus whatever, we'll not be able to get started. The reason why these regulations require Parliament to be given reports is basically for Parliament to see how is the inspection working, and where must Parliament strengthen the arm? That's why every year, annually, reports must be presented by the Minister, not by the Chief Justice. The Minister must report to Parliament in terms of this Act. Parliament will have an opportunity. so that it, they can basically go strengthen as those things fall in the cracks as time goes on. So it's the minimalist approach that which you think we're starting somewhere, and we are one of the very few countries who have gone thus far. Hence, we are saying that we are definitely sure that the first instrument may not be perfect, but like all other instruments, it will be built as time goes on. Thanks, Chair.
Let me just indicate to members that transport has not been arranged. Ne?
Mm.
The last bus is at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that. And we're 10 minutes away, almost.
Yeah.
Let us look at that situation. We have an opportunity, if we want to call the department back, we're meeting on the 12th again. We can call the department if there are issues we want to raise with the department, because we are deliberating on that particular day. Can I also request members that if there are changes that we think we want to effect on the regulations, just don't wait for that specific day. You know? Contact the secretary who can communicate, who can distribute that to all members, so that when we come and discuss, we're able to can deal with that, because we want to finalize the regulations by next week, by the 12th, so that we can prepare ourselves and adopt them before we rise. No? Yeah, but if there's anything members feel that they want to raise now that is extremely urgent, let's deal with that quickly so that you can adjourn this meeting.
The bus is waiting for
me, Chair. It's not a long thing. I mean, it's the input that came from Skosana actually reinforces what
I was saying. We can't create a register, or what you call a complaining register. We must create a register that must demand compliance. Because compliance and disclosure, they are almost mechanical things. And then we don't need to, for if there is a particular thing to be disclosed in terms of the rules, and a judge refuses. Now it must kick many people to get involved in hearings and the evaluations and reviews to actually convince the judge to actually comply with just a disclosure. The registrar must be a person that has got enough authority in terms of the regulations to demand compliance, because you must ensure what you want to achieve, as it has been indicated, confidence in our judiciary.
Members, if there's nothing else, thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned until the next meeting. We will inform the department. Do we need the department? Isn't it? Okay. Yeah. The secretary will make sure that you are invited to the next meeting. Thank you very much.
And the chairman of the national?
Yeah, we will also make sure that the chairperson of the National Assembly is part of another member.
Oh,
so that, yeah, because
yeah.
The National Assembly has completed that particular process. They are waiting on us.
Yeah.
So that you can move forward.
Thank you.